Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. Today, joining me on the co-host duty, we've got Mr. Eric Shapiro, the doctor.
How you doing, Al?
I'm doing okay. Been real busy, of course, as usual, but that's how it goes. It's that time of the year, Christmas rush.
Writing like crazy, huh?
yeah, it's okay. It's good. Good.
Keeps
my mind focused somewhat.
Yeah, it's kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. If when I'm writing, I feel nice and agitated and busy, and when I'm not writing, I'm staring into the abyss.
Yeah, I can't do that for very long. I have to go back to writing, so it's a little bit more than I want it to at this time. It's sort of everything got kind of, you know, edit sort of stuff, but
you're crunching a bit.
Yeah, but it's all good. It's all good.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Excellent. So let's see here. Oh, I have to ask, did you dress up for Halloween?
I did. You know, I was less creative than I've been in recent years. I got away this year with just a wolf mask and like nothing else, just black clothing. So that was it. I was very lazy. Whereas in recent years, my friends get very excited. I dress up like a woman and everybody's delighted and I love doing it and it's a blast. But you know, what started happening is I realized as years have gone on, I can't just be a woman generically because it becomes politically a bit problematic. Like it's just like, you know, if you're just a woman, it's like, well, what statement are you making? So last year I was a witch, but it's hard. This year I was going to a couple parties and I don't want to be like a witch with a dress and a hat and a broom and have to drive around like that. So I just was a wolf man.
Well, there you go. That's that's exciting. I mean,
it was exciting. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
My kids who are 10 and 7, both for the first time in their lives, were scary. Like they were both monsters, which I flipped out. I was so excited. You know, they didn't want anything like that before. They were more like cutesy costumes in the past, like Super Mario Brothers. Yeah. This time they were like bloody, you know, demented psychopaths. So it was, everybody was very happy.
Yeah. Make sure you lock the door when you're in the shower.
Right. And how about yourself? You don't strike me as the type to dress up, but did you?
No.
Or do they even do it in Canada? What's going on?
No. Yeah, we just turn on TV and watch the U.S.
Oh,
no,
okay, got it.
No, actually they do, but I don't. I haven't dressed up since 1984 when they made me up like Boy George.
Oh, there you go. That's perfectly timely. And yeah, that would actually incidentally be perfectly timely right at this moment also.
Yeah, no, it worked. It worked. I won best costume at two different places.
Oh, wow. So that's good. You went out while you were big. You went out on top.
Yeah.
I don't have to dress up again. I won a prize.
Yeah, that's it. I quit after that.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Walk away from the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now today we've got an interesting guest. We got she's new to the show, hasn't been on before, and we're going to talk about her writing and book that just came out, I guess, back in February. It's called Hide in Place, and it's a novel. We're going to talk about that and what's coming out after, which is next February. So, Amelia Neymark, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, Amelia, so did you dress up at Halloween? Or?
So I dressed up in my mind, and I had a very, very good costume. But in real life, I just kind of sat and handed out candy until I got attacked by a bunch of four-year-olds who took candy.
Well, I feel better. I thought I didn't exert myself, but if you were just in your mind, then I feel like I worked really hard.
Yeah.
Eric, actually, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Were you a lady wolfman?
You know, that's open to interpretation. You know, what's interesting is what really becomes exciting for all parties involved is in the lady years is the tights. You know, that can really lift the vibration of the whole situation. So I did go for the tights at one event. I did. Yes, I guess I was a lady wolf, or I was at least an effeminate wolf. Yeah, I love it. Good question. Well, but more importantly, impressingly, what were you in your mind?
Oh, what was I in my mind?
Yeah.
So I was menopause.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I love. We went to a party. My friend Florencia Mandeville. She was actually on this show because she's a filmmaker. We went to her party, and she was Fate. Which was really cool. We were talking about how much I love people that dress up as concepts. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, well, mine was actually very good in my mind. Because I made it out of paper mache.
Oh, wow.
And it was this woman's head that was all like painted red and shiny. And she had claws in my shoulders. And she was like sitting on top of me like a gargoyle. And I walked around with her. But then I thought, you know, much like Eric, I would have trouble sitting in a car with that.
Oh, that's pretty involved. Yeah. But that's involved on every level. I mean, you have to go to the paper mache store in your mind, and then, yeah.
Yeah, and I did all that in my mind.
Wow, yeah, that's good. That's good. That's the way to do it.
I could see Eric driving in a car with a witch outfit on.
Right. Well, anything's possible. It's just that hat goes up so high. I have an OCD attack.
You could end up in trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you know I try and stay out of trouble.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, yeah. Right. It depends what neighborhood you're in, right? You never know, right? Oh. So Amelia, let's talk about your writing. How did you get involved in writing?
Right, so that's a great question, because I didn't start out as a writer. I started out, you know, when I was like 8 years old, I decided that I was going to be an artist. And I went to art school, and I was an artist. And then I became a digital artist. And then I started coding. So at a certain point in my life, I kind of realized that I kind of veered away from where I started out, which was wanting to be a creative person, because although design is creative and coding actually can be very creative, it still is not quite the same. So I thought, let me try another impractical, you know, future, and I'll try to be a writer. I'm going to, you know, I don't know anything about writing other than being a reader. And I've always been just kind of a crazy, voracious reader. So I started taking classes. And when I had to take them online, because at the time I had a small kid and a husband who worked all the time, and I worked full time. So like going to actual physical school was not really going to happen. And when I say I didn't know anything about writing, I didn't know how to tag dialogue. but in my mind, much like creating great costumes, I knew that I could create a great novel. So after some time, I was able to actually produce something that someone liked, and I got it published. And so that felt great. It took a little while, but I got there. So that's that story.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have, now if I'm right, you have a pretty interesting history. Now you were born in a country that no longer exists. Like, what do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. So I was born in the Soviet Union, which does not exist anymore. And I actually, when we immigrated, it was still the Soviet Union, and it was actually still the Soviet Union for a long time after I was already living in America. But one of the things that that actually gave me was a certain idea of what it means to be Russian, which is in everything I write. And what I really, and I only just realized this maybe like a week ago, and I realized that what it means to me to be Russian is that you have, it's, it actually, the culture lends itself very well to being a criminal.
I got to tell you, before you go on, I am Russian. I've never been there, but all four of my grandparents were Russian. This is fascinating. And I actually was just reading in the past couple of weeks about what it means to be Russian. So please keep going. I'm so curious about the criminal thing.
Well, what's even more interesting is your last name is Shapiro.
Yes.
So is my grandmother's maiden name was Shapiro.
Wow. Okay, so that means we're like distant cousins, because there's only so many Shapiros. I mean, it's a small pool, so we're probably like 12th cousins or something. That's awesome.
Probably, yeah. Maybe closer.
Yeah.
but I end up putting all these like Russian criminals into my novels because while it was the Soviet Union, there was this mentality that the authority is very strong, everything is the government. You don't work for any kind of private enterprise. Everybody works for the government. If you're a doctor, you work for the government. If you're a publisher, a writer, whatever you are, you work for the government. So there's this attitude that, the government is everything, authority is everything. And at the same time, there's this understanding that everything is corrupt. Mm-hmm. So basically 100% of authority is also corrupt. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of on your own. So on the one hand, you depend on the government and authority, but on the other hand, you really have to depend on yourself. So there's a very much of a do-it-yourself kind of attitude, rely on yourself. And that, something about that, and also knowing that, things can go really badly really quickly. And that's just kind of part of the mentality. And that just lends itself really well to somehow saying, well, to being a criminal, because, it's like everything about it just kind of lends itself to that. So in my first novel, I have the Russian mob in there. And the sequel, I just couldn't get away from the Russians. They're in there as well, although they're like a little less organized.
It's hard to get away from the Russians. Once you're in, that's it.
Yeah, it's true. I can't get away.
Wait, so how old were you when you left the Soviet Union?
So I was a child. I was 8.
Oh, but you still have some memories of it.
I have memories, and I've been back, and I still have family there. And at the time you could, I'm not even sure if you can now, I think you can now, but at the time you didn't, you basically became a refugee. So, and you didn't know where you were going to end up. So a lot of people were in this kind of stateless place where and it was in Italy. So a lot of people ended up living in Italy for a while until some country would give them basically a visa to come in and start living there. So we could have ended up anywhere. And we ended up in New York, which was like, the best thing that ever happened to me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, New York is the best. So wait. So in your story, in your novel, in the first one, are the Russians the bad guys, quote unquote? Or are you identifying with the criminal mentality? Tell us about the story.
So the story is actually about my protagonist is an American. She's an American woman, and she is an undercover detective who works for the NYPD. Mm-hmm. And one of the cases that she works is a racketeering case against the Russian mob. And she works undercover. So she has to come up with a persona that, like, obviously she can't pretend to be Russian. So she pretends to be, just a drug dealer who wants to, you know, whatever it is that she decides, she comes up with her own kind of hook. But she has to work within that culture, and she has to kind of figure out how to get them to trust her. And that's part of the story. And there's the story kind of happens in two timelines. There's like the before timeline and the after timeline. And in the after timeline, which is happens in real time, her teenage son goes missing. So one of the things that, you know, she kind of has to consider is that did her past catch up with her somehow? Or is her son just like, you know, a really difficult teenager?
Mm. So like the nature and nurture sort of thing.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. But I had a tremendous of fun writing about the Russian mob, because I don't think it's possible to write about the Russian mob and not have fun.
Wow, tell us more about that. Why is it so much fun?
Because they're crazy. Because, like I said, they will do anything. Just even doing the research was a lot of fun. So one of my favorite stories about, like a Russian mobster. There was this one. He's still alive, but his nickname was Tarzan, and he much like me and my family, he moved to the United States in the early 80s, and he settled in Brighton Beach. And very early on, he started kind of being an enforcer for, I think the the Italian gangs. He started being an enforcer for somebody. And then he kind of realized that he could sort of do it himself. And one thing led to another. And at some point after the collapse of the Soviet Union, he was able to almost broker a deal to buy a military submarine from the ex-Russian Navy and sell it to the Colombians so that they could transfer cocaine underwater, which is like everything about this is just so awesome, because not only is it that here is this gangster who like left, you know, the Soviet Union, became very American, and then realized that he could be a gangster. But then you have like the military people in what became Russia who were also, for all intents and purposes, are gangsters in their own right, because they were like, well, here's these submarines. They're not doing anybody any good. We can sell them for. I mean, I just love that concept.
Wow. Yeah. It's interesting. The whole thing about criminality and the appeal of it. I've always felt that there's a real overlap between being a criminal and being creative, or being a criminal and being an artist. Like, because it is like kind of like you're getting away with something. And I always feel like when I'm talking to Al here, you know, he could say anything at any time, so there's danger. It's like, you know, this guy's a criminal in his own right. Like, he, you know, he's over the line. So it's I think there is, those personality types kind of are next door to each other.
Well, there you
go. I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm criminally insane,
right? That's, yeah, you took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it. I mean, I don't know any different, because that's who I am. I wonder now if you, so when you talk about these characters, the Russian mob characters and stuff, where do you draw that from for you personally?
So,
like the characters themselves.
Yeah, the characters themselves. I mean, I feel like I knew so many people who were, like you said, like next door to being criminal. Not quite, but there's a very specific, like, machismo laden attitude that, you know, Russian men have, that it was just so easy. It was at my fingertips, and I could just make these guys that way, you know. I could just hear them. And that part of it was very interesting to write, because you know, they're actually, they're not the heroes of the story. The hero of the story is my female cop. And so she has to figure out how to be a woman within the police department. But then she also has to figure out how to be a woman within this environment where she's going undercover, where she has to act a certain way, and she can't have a, you know, a chip on her shoulder. She can't be, you know, the way she is in the police department, where she's like, I can be anything you can be, I can do anything you can do. She can't be like that when she's undercover. She has to kind of fit with what these guys' expectations are. You know, so that to me was actually very interesting.
That is very interesting. So she has to sort of acculturate to the, and yes, she has to be more submissive.
She has to be more submissive. She has to be sexier than she would be. than she would be.
That's really good. That sounds like it would be a good movie.
Yeah, well, yeah. From your lips to God's ears, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So are there scenes where it's like Reservoir Dogs, like she's undercover and her heart's beating fast and she's worried they're going to catch on? Is it that sort of storytelling?
Some of it.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, because she has to. Because actually one of the reasons I chose to write this, to make this kind of like the crime or one of the crimes, is that I'm married to somebody who was an undercover NYPD detective.
Oh, wow.
And he worked racketeering cases. And so he gave me so many stories. And at some point we always used to talk, oh, you know, he's going to write, you know, down his memoirs, but he's not a writer. So then I thought, okay, I'll write his memoirs, but that just like never happened. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take his stories and I'm going to make him a lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems to be the theme of this conversation.
Right.
Anyway. and so a lot of what happens to my character, and a lot of the reason why I even knew what needs to happen, is because of what I knew my husband had to go through.
Wow, that's got to be very stressful. Does he still carry the stress from having done that, or it was more something he was able to deal with?
Well, for him, it was actually very, very fun. He really enjoyed it.
Oh,
and I have to say, I've met other partners that he's worked with, and a couple of women that he worked with who were also undercover, and every one of them, when they talk about going undercover, it's like their faces light up.
Wow. So it was like acting. It was like play acting.
Exactly. And so that's exactly, so you know how we talked about being criminal, you kind of have to be creative. Well, to be an undercover, you absolutely have to be creative. Because you have to create a persona. You have to dress differently than you normally dress. You have to talk differently from how you normally talk. And it can be a lot of fun.
Wow. How do you think you would be if you had to be undercover? Do you think you would be more anxious, or can you relate to the fun component of these of your husband and his colleagues?
Oh, you know what? I never even thought of that. I think I would. I don't think I could do it.
I would have a heart attack. Like, I would be in an ambulance. Like, Al, would you be able to do that, Al? With a whole persona? And if somebody looked at me wrong, I would go under.
No, I could do it, but I'm far too old, you know.
Oh, but, you're at this point, yeah. But do you think you temperamentally you could have done it?
Oh, easy, because I'm in that little spectrum fog, and I can easily. If people don't know if I'm serious or not.
And right, you keep your blood pressure low and all that stuff.
Yeah, and that's something I've always had without trying. So I've learned to play with it and use it as a strength in a sense.
Yeah, it's like your deadpan strength.
Yeah.
Sort of like, yeah, just administer, like, yeah, just say things nonchalantly.
Yeah, it's one of the few things I've got. So you got to make
it. Look at us now. It's paying off for you. It's big.
Yeah, you know, it takes a long time, but, you know, I'm kind of old. And, but, you know, it's, so it's good. But I was thinking this would be a perfect character for you for next Halloween.
Which one of my,
The Russian woman mobster.
Right, right.
Think about it.
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, for Eric to dress up as a Russian woman.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because he could do it. You know, he just has to get the accent down a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. Because I look very Russian. My eyebrows are thick. It's true. I'll take it under consideration. I can see smoke the cigarettes. Yeah.
Yeah, and a woman, you see, because you were saying a woman, so this is a
yeah. Woman, I don't want to be a generic woman, right? Yeah.
You have a
you have to wear leather,
right? Leather gloves, right?
Leather. You have to have red hair,
right? Oh, this is good. Okay, I think you guys talked me into it.
Yeah,
Amelia has to be my consultant though, because I have to get all the details.
Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, you walk around with like a bottle of vodka.
Right, exactly. In book two. So book two is forthcoming? Is it coming next
February, and it's called Behind the Lie.
Okay.
And it continues, you know, with my lady who, you know.
And she's undercover again.
So, she's not undercover in the next one.
Okay.
But so when you in the first one, the first thing you find out about her is that she quits the NYPD in the aftermath of that racketeering case. She quits and she moves up into the Hudson Valley of New York State. And after, you know, and she kind of like manages this kind of half life, kind of trying to come back to herself after the stuff that happened to her. And that's when her son disappears. So that kind of starts off the first novel. And by the time you get to the second novel, she's a little more comfortable in where she lives, in the neighborhood where she lives. And it's a very friendly neighborhood. And it starts with this humongous block party, and then things go downhill from there.
Wow!
There's two of us.
Are you feeling the potential for a series? Like you could go beyond book two? Like this character is with you? And
I have an extremely, extremely strong idea for the third in the series, but. Again, that's something that is not has not been, you know, I have to convince, other people that it's a good idea too. So that's still in the works.
Right. You have to convince other people. I'm sure it's tied up in the commerciality of the second one. Is that accurate? Like,
I'm assuming. So I'm still very new to the business of all of this. And I don't really, okay. Basically almost everything that happens to me is a big, big surprise.
Story of my life.
So that's good. That's good. Because it's like, there's an innocence to that. It's like, oh, this is such an adventure. So you're not cynical. It's all,
yeah.
It's
that what you just said just reminded me, when I was still on submission for the first book, I met, this guy who I think he was like a super editor, and I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly, you know, what he, you know, I'm not going to say his name, but he said, oh, you're on submission for your first book. I said, yes. He's like, that's good. Nothing bad has happened to you yet. I'm like, oh my God.
Right. Like, all okay. Right. Yeah. Enjoy it. I mean, not to say necessarily anything bad, Will. I mean, it's still, cause I've been in it for, over 20 years, and it still gets very, very exciting. I mean, there's still a lot of positivity, but then I do think there are those experiences that lead a little more to cynicism or, you know, keeping your guard up. So it's good. It's good you're in that place where it's, it still has that freshness.
Yeah.
What do you think your relationship is with your main character? How do you feel about her?
I feel like she's a real person. I feel like she like lives next door to me or something. Like I have I don't know, like I almost have conversations with her. She's incredibly real. She's not me, because she's actually like very different from how I am in many, many ways. But she's a mother, so I am as well. So we have that in common. And she's a mother of a teenage boy, which I am as well. And she lives up in the Hudson Valley, which I do. So I think that's, and she's female. So we have those things in common, but, I don't know. I think she's like this weird person and I like her. She doesn't behave in the expected ways. You know, it's funny because sometimes I'll read a review that somebody wrote, and every once in a while somebody will say, "I think that these are very quirky characters." I'm like, "Oh yeah, but that's kind of cool."
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like how you were describing how she is undercover and so forth, and just, you know, changing her behavior and the dissonance, the contrast between how she is and how she has to be. That's definitely a level of sophistication that's not always found in genre writing, but it makes genre writing really good. And are you writing her in the first person?
No, but I write very close third.
Oh, okay. Close third, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like you're brinking, like you're almost inside her head.
Yes. Yeah. I find that when I do write in first person, I don't know, maybe I'm just not good enough because I end up being too much about me. Whereas when it's close third person, it's very, very easy for me to not, for it not to be me.
Oh, you can keep some distance. That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I'm often in the first person and it usually is the characters like a version of me. Like it could be my brother and my cousin. So I absolutely understand that. Like, and that's very much like the Hunter S. Thompson thing. Like even if he had a different name, it was always him, you know, it was a persona. So right. That's good. It's good to sort of take a step back. It gives you the perspective to make her own person.
A little bit, yeah. And the second one is her 13-year-old son. So I write.
And how old is, you said you have a son who's around the same age?
So books take a lot longer than human beings.
Okay.
So when I first started writing it, they were about the same age. And now, of course, my son is a bit older than the character. Yeah.
Oh, got it. Okay, good. But he's still a teenager.
He's still a teenager. Yeah.
And the guy, and as of book two, the fictional son is 13.
As of book two, he gets to be 15.
Oh, got it. Is he, sorry if I'm not tracking. So in book one, he's there as a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's not. But it's in his point of view more in book two.
So in book one is the point of view is him and her. So
that's, oh, got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And by the time I get to the second book, I kind of turn away a little bit and deal with, like, I introduce a couple more characters.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're doing in book one, you're doing cross-cutting between their two worlds.
Yeah.
To extent.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you write each section on its own chronologically, or you actually wrote and cross-cut while you were writing?
I wrote them chronologically, and I wrote them trying to think of which point of view would make that, you know, that part of the story the most, you know, effective. So,
right, okay.
Yeah.
So you wrote each one individually, and then you shuffled the deck.
No, I kind of wrote them to an outline. So I kind of like started at the beginning and went to the end. But I think I might have kind of rearranged things at some point.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Because I definitely, when I first finished the first draft, it was so light. It was only 50,000 words, and I was like, okay, I gotta. So that's when like more of the shuffling came in and filling out, and then it became a novel.
Oh, I understand. So what was the ultimate word count?
I think 78,000. So it's it's a quick read for sure.
Wow, that's for me that's long. I've written mostly novellas. I mean, I look at people like you and Al, you're like you have the endurance, you're like marathon runners. Like even 50,000 for me is a push, but 70,000 sounds very, very full.
It was at first, it was kind of scary because I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure, like, how, you know, what was going to happen. But it actually really, what it was putting in a lot of those little details and stories and, you know, the buying drugs and all that. So,
how do you get into your character? Do you actually put on the leather and the red wig and go out and buy drugs and do stuff? Like, is there something you have to do to put yourself in that frame of mind?
Well, I have to, you know, those are really good ideas. Maybe I should do that. No, I end up doing a lot of like mental throat clearing before actually I start writing. But once that's out of the way, I get into the zone and I get into their minds. I can write as them.
Is the throat clearing on a daily basis? Like every time when you sit down to write, you sort of have to go in that zone? Or is it more per project? Like there's a period of mental preparation and you're just ready to live inside it for a few weeks?
Well, it's unfortunately... For me, it's both.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So every day when I sit down to write, that throat clearing can like be brutal. But eventually, like I do get into this zone.
Yeah, that is the hardest part, sitting down every day. It's like, I don't think people understand, like even if you've written for years daily, like I think any given day, it's like you really are with that blank page, you're facing something kind of daunting.
And I wish there was, you know, lately I found that I have to be very strict with myself. And what I started doing is I started taking my phone and putting a timer on it so I can visually see it. And I just turn on the timer and I tell myself that while that timer is going, I'm not allowed to do anything other than write the scene. Mm. So I can't check mail. I can't answer the phone. I can't, you know, listen to music. I can't do anything. It has to be just that. And for as long as that timer goes, I do it. And that actually has been really helpful, which is
how long do you set the timer for? What's the window?
25 minutes.
Oh, and then you just write like mad.
And then I write like mad. And then I give my, and then I set it again for 10 minutes. And those 10 minutes, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, so meaning external to writing, not within the writing. You just party around the house.
Exactly. And then,
wow. Yeah, what's interesting is something I do for suspense. I haven't done it in a while. I don't know if I'm getting too old for it. I would drink a cup of water then I would inevitably have to, you know, I drink like a tall glass of water. I'd inevitably have to empty my bladder, but I wouldn't allow myself to until the scene was done, which was like, if I have to write something very, very suspenseful, that really works. So it's almost the same concept. It's like you are pinned. What I'm describing is more masochistic, but you are pinned to this spot until you get this done. That's it.
Oh my God. I'm afraid to try that.
I don't recommend it. As a matter of fact, as it came out of my mouth, I'm like, I really am a lunatic. But yeah, that's what you reminded me of. I mean, the timer is a more mature approach.
Maybe. Yeah. Except the reason why it exists is because of a great level of immaturity.
Right. You have to take one with the other. But wait, so what do you do during the 10 minutes when you get your, so that's like your reward is the 10 minutes. What do? You dance around?
Anything else? Check my mail, go on Facebook, nice. Like, you know, whatever, get up, get a cookie, whatever. and then at 25 minutes, begin again.
Oh, very good.
She really has her husband tied up and hanging from a rope.
Right, right.
And she better finish that. Or in the, and the 10 minutes, she gives him water, you know?
Yeah. You know what?
It's less about the writing process.
That's interesting. That's where your mind went.
Right.
Well, Russian, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, gangsters, you know. You're really where, you know, you could see her. She's sitting there and she's got her red leather on and her wig and whatever is going on. And the husband's up there tied, you know, from his feet. You know,
right.
She's typing away, and as he's screaming, that's perfect. You know, to take it's great atmosphere.
Great atmosphere, yeah. It's like mood music.
Yeah.
There you go. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to ask him. I'm gonna have to tell him that's what I'm. If he really supports me as a
yeah,
yeah. He has to agree to that.
As an ex-cop, you know, he does, you know, he probably has, he'll have some ideas for escaping, so he should be open to it.
Yeah.
So, I'm right now, I'm on Goodreads reading the reviews. So it seems like the thrust of book one is your son is missing, which I don't think you mentioned, and she's searching for him. So is that the centrifugal plot device of the first book?
That is of the first book. Like I said, so when he goes missing, she then has to kind of try to, you know, because he's troubled and he's gone missing before, and you find that out on the very first page, basically.
So he wasn't necessarily kidnapped.
Yeah, they don't like it.
They don't know.
They don't know, and she has to take it upon herself, because ultimately she knows more about him and about what might have happened than the local detectives do. And she's also not really at liberty to expose the things that she knows. So there's a lot of stuff that leaves her very much alone and on her own that she has to kind of handle.
God, is she single in the book or is she married?
So she's divorced she's divorced, and then part of the before timeline, she was married in the before timeline. And again, that's something that's pretty much revealed in the first chapter.
Okay. I'm reading one review right now that says, Hide in Place is a tightly coiled spring ready to pop into the reader's consciousness and grab hold. So is that your impulse? Is that your guiding motive, is to create that suspense that doesn't let up?
That is my motive. I think ultimately what I want to do is write like the perfect escapist read. I don't know if I've necessarily, that is my goal. That is my goal. But I guess it depends on what people want to escape into.
is that your favorite thing to read as a reader also?
Yeah. I mean, but I read very, very widely. I have very, very, very eclectic reading tastes. So, but yeah, I think being inside the head or an experience that I wouldn't normally have is is great. I mean, that's why I read.
Where do you see yourself going with this now? Whether you do another, continue on with the series or do something else, what do you see yourself doing?
Well, I mean, I would love to continue writing crime. I really, really, it's sweet. I love writing crime because I love the why of it. I love figuring out what makes people become criminals or commit a crime. That is really, really interesting to me. And the ramifications and the attitude that, you know, why do people have this attitude that they can commit a crime, that they won't get caught? How does it make them feel when they commit the crime? Like, all of that is very, very interesting. And the suspense and the figuring out who did it, why they did it, all of that is, like, I'm really, really into that. What I'm finding, though, is that it makes my head go into dark, dark places. So I actually don't know how long I'll be able to continue writing extremely dark things. But for now, that is very much what I'm interested in, and I would love to just continue doing it. And even when I write short stories, I write about crime, basically.
Hmm. Where do you get your influences from? Like, do other writers, or is it just, where does that come from?
So definitely other writers. My go-to writer right now is Tana French. I think she's just great. I mean, I really love the way that she writes, and really, I mean, Stephen King. Yeah, he's a huge, huge, huge influence in every way. And then as far as the crime element, I subscribe to a few different sort of crime newsletters for, like, whatever goes on. And that is actually really inspiring because sometimes the things you read about that people do, you just kind of gotta wonder, like, where did they even come up with the idea? And then how did they manage to do it? So all of that put together goes into my head. And I also, I like writing about things that happen in the area where I live, which, you know, I live in a small town. I mean, yesterday we had elections and I personally knew two people who were running. That's how you know you live in a small town. And, but there's all kinds of stuff that happens even here. And I can't wait till I kind of get my hands on a whole lot of it and write more about it. So that's what I'd like to keep doing.
Nice. That's very Stephen King also, because it's that sort of small town intrigue and politics and history and the dramas that go on. So yeah, I could see that you doing that really well based on the way you describe your writing.
Ah, well, thank you. Yeah, and it's a hugely historical area where I live, so that kind of adds into it as well.
Nice, yeah, that could be really fun to dig into and create parallels to the real history or drawing inspiration from it.
That, and also there's people who are really, really obsessed with history, and what happens when you become obsessed with history? And you can't, and maybe there's something that you want and you can't have. I mean, there's a whole ton of stuff that can be mined.
So now, do you have a website, or do you like to interact with readers of yours or fans or anything like that? How do people find you?
So I do have a website, and it's AmeliaNamark.com/author, although if you just go to AmeliaNamark.com, you'll see my kind of design coding site, and there's a link right on the homepage to go to the author site. And I'm still kind of working out how to have these two identities, you know, interact together online. But I also have a very active Facebook presence, and I'm on Instagram. Those are the big places. And I, whenever there, you know, I'm part of Mystery Writers of America, ITW, Sisters in Crime. So I participate in a lot of, whenever there's something going on that I can participate in, I participate in it.
Now, so when you were writing at like the new one coming out, over the pandemic and stuff, does it sort of affect you able to sit down and write? Like, does your timer, can you do that 20 minutes or?
Yeah. So I think I somehow was able to write. That was not so much an issue. I think what ended up being, what happening was that I had a hard time making bad things happen to my characters, because it's hard to go someplace very dark in your mind when the world seems to be kind of burning, which is what was happening while I was writing it. And it's one of those things, like writing is kind of this like weird, spooky thing that happens in your head. So I'm sure when I read it back in a year, I'll see a lot more of how the pandemic influenced me than I am probably aware of right now.
Hmm. Yeah. So you didn't beat your husband as badly.
No.
Well, that's nice to know. Yeah. Well, it's been a real pleasure. I'm glad you took the time to come on and talk about your writing and your books. Now you've got one of the series of Hide in Place that came out in February of this year, and you've got a new, part of the book or series or book two of it coming out next February. So it's a real pleasure having you. So the book we're talking about is Hide in Place, a novel. What's the new one going to be called?
It's called Behind the Lie.
Oh, interesting.
Awesome.
Good names. Yeah. So our guest, Amelia Namark, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much. This was so great. I loved it. Thank you.
Get the latest news and opinions from Eric Shapiro from the House of Mystery website in the Shapiro Report.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.